application for water well augmentation, and I want to advise council that Justice Ide is not participating in this case. So, and I also acknowledge the presence. We have a lot of law students here from DU and a professor with Professor Marsh. We appreciate your visiting us, and we're ready to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Andy Jones. I'm here representing the Well Augmentation Subdistrict of the Central Colorado Water Conservancy District. I'll be the only council arguing on behalf of WUS this morning. With me at council table, I have David Jones and Brad Grasmick. I have given 5 minutes of my 30 minutes to the state engineer, so the Attorney General's office will be arguing on the substitute water supply plan appeal issue. I may or may not get to that issue in my presentation. In case I don't, I wanted to let you know that WUS fully supports the state's position on the substitute water supply plan appeal standard. I will try to reserve some time for rebuttal. We'll see how that goes. I've prepared an outline with the most important points, what I believe are the most important points, but when it gets right down to it, my intent here is to answer your questions and to be certain that you understand our arguments. This case involves an augmentation plan for 215 wells. These wells were drilled into the alluvium of the South Platte River between 1904 and 2001. They have well permits and water court decrees. They are decreed water rights, each of them. The water court entered a decree in this case in May 2008. WUS appeals four rulings of law from that decree. Three of them have associated decree terms. I just want to run through those very quickly to give you an outline of where I'm headed here. The first issue has to do with post-pumping depletions. And the specific pretrial order that we're appealing is that was entered July 12, 2006. The second issue has to do with Box Elder Creek depletions. There was also an order entered on July 12, 2006. And the third issue has to do with something we call the well call issue, and that order was entered October 18, 2007. In each of these cases, the trial court made a legal ruling that set the course for the trial. So in a lot of ways, it controlled the evidence that was presented at trial. So our contention is that the trial court took a wrong turn very early on these issues, and we're trying to get you to take a look at these initial legal rulings. The first issue I wanted to discuss with you was the post-pumping depletions issue. This is really a question of jurisdiction. The issue is whether an augmentation plan applicant must replace depletions caused by pumping alleged to have occurred prior to the filing of the augmentation plan application. The trial court in this case found that WUS was required to replace pumping that occurred prior to the 2003 filing date of this application, merely because the pumping was done using the same structures that are involved in this case. Our primary contention on this issue is that a claim of pre-existing injury is beyond the scope of an augmentation plan application filed pursuant to 3792.302. In other words, it is not an in rem or quasi in rem action qualifying for service by publication. Well, this is not a new issue to you. You have addressed this issue several times already. As described in the briefs, in the GASP case, you found that the 302 actions were narrowly tailored for a specific purpose and would not support a claim of injunction. You made a similar finding in the Gardner case, where you found that the issue of abandonment could not be decided in the context of a 302 application.
Well, isn't what your client wanting here is to cover a group of wells who have water rights that can't operate in priority given the available supply? So you're not really augmenting the structure, are you? Aren't you augmenting the water right? And under our law, isn't the water right just decreed to the structure, but what you're actually doing is having the water right be able to function? So would you explain why we should even think about the ownership issues you've raised with regard to the structure. Aren't we talking about the water right and the impact of its operation on the stream down the line?
We are, Your Honor, but whether we're talking about the well structure or the water right, both of those are an in-rim or quasi-in-rim issue. Our contention is that the wells or the water rights don't cause injury, that people do, that in order to have jurisdiction to essentially award a remedy for these alleged past pumping, you would have to have jurisdiction over the person who made the pumping. And so we don't believe that the in-rim jurisdiction...
Well, wouldn't that cause chaos in the water law, though? Because ownership can change, and ownership title of the water right is different from the operation of the water right itself. I mean, you'd acknowledge that, right?
Yes, ownership is a separate issue.
So you're saying that nobody is bound by, even though they enjoy the rights of the water right that goes back to senior priority, they're not bound by actions with regard to the water right that their predecessors in interest took?
That's correct.
Why is that?
Because they could be bound for those actions, but our contention is that they cannot be bound in a 302 action initiated by substituted service. In other words, in order to bind a party for the actions, allegedly unlawful actions occurring in the past, you'd have to have personal jurisdiction over that party. The equivalent here would be, if you think about it in terms of a surface water right, what opposers are saying here is the equivalent of a ditch owner who makes unlawful diversions and then sells the water right to another. Is a subsequent owner liable for the consequential damages caused by the diversions of the preceding owner? That, to us, offends just basic notions of due process. If anyone is liable for those unlawful actions or allegedly unlawful actions, it should be the party that took them and not the subsequent owner. It's possible that you could have a scheme where these liabilities attach to the water right or to the well structure, but I think if you look at the 69 Act the way it's written, we don't have that structure in Colorado. The remedy that our General Assembly chose for allegedly unlawful diversions is curtailment under 3792.503. It is not injunctive relief in the context of a 302.
Mr. Jones, it appears to me that you are sort of interpreting the court order. I mean, you didn't explicitly impose an injunction. I guess you're in essence saying that it was in effect an injunction. Similarly speaking, he didn't impose any liability. Again, he was using it as a measure or a means of determining future injury. And so I guess you're saying, in effect, it was a liability. But then after having made those two leaps, you then talk about for liability, which is an imposition of some sort of consequence or penalty, you need personal jurisdiction. And I'm kind of missing you because of your interpretation of the court order. So explain to me why you need personal jurisdiction, not to impose a fine or some consequence of that nature, but in order to determine future injury by looking at past use and depletions.
In order to determine the nature of an action, this court has said that you're going to look at the nature of the claim and the remedy granted. The nature of the claim here is that sometime in the past, the former owners of these wells, or in some cases the owners of these wells, diverted unlawfully, essentially. And the remedy that is sought is a mandatory injunction requiring replacement of the depletions that were caused by those actions. And so we think if you look at the nature of the claim and the remedy sought, what's really sought here is injunctive relief. The critical piece here is that these depletions, let's call them the GASP depletions, these depletions from prior to the time that the augmentation plan was filed, they exist whether there's a filing or not. Whether this plan is decreed or not decreed, that's a pre-existing injury that's already there. And this court has already said in the Steffens case that the 302 application is not the context to assess pre-existing injury. The augmentation plan is intended to look at what the potential injury would be from the operation of the plan and diversions authorized under the plan. That's the way the 69 Act was written. So the trial court has attached this burden from the past, if you will, in a way that we think is inconsistent with the Act. I'd like to...
Could you just repeat what you said about how you think the act was intended to deal with these prior the pumping that was prior to this application?
Certainly. We believe that the act was written to be prospective in nature, and that is so that the question at issue, if you read the language in the act, is what is the potential injury from diversions under this plan? So that's prospective. To answer your question, how do you deal with the past injuries? The act is very clearly set up in a way that the primary remedy is curtailment. That's the remedy Colorado has chosen. If the diversions were unlawful in some way, they should have been curtailed. However, the secondary remedy, which is provided for in 3792.503, is a private suit for damages. In other words, if opposing parties can show that they've been injured by these depletions, then they are entitled to relief, and the Act provides for that. So there is a remedy. It's just that it's not within the 302 context. I'd like to spend a moment on Box Elder designated.
Well, one more question on jurisdiction here, because isn't it true that these wells would be curtailed, prohibited from operating, as of the date and after the application, unless they voluntarily associated themselves with a plan that replaces the injurious depletion as it hits the stream and injures other water rights? So what we're talking about here, arguably, is a statutory scheme, whereas if you want to operate out of priority, in other words, the administration of the call does not apply to you, then you have to cover whatever injury is occurring post-application date to the stream. And that's really what the water judge did here, was require that the hole in the river be plugged prospectively. So would you respond to that?
Your Honor, I think that if you read the Act closely, all of the use that's talked about in the Act is either prospective in nature or contemplated to have occurred under a substitute water supply plan. So I agree with you that it's the role of the trial court to ensure that injury doesn't occur in the future. But the question is, injury from what? Does the trial court have jurisdiction to remedy any kind of injury that may have occurred in the past in relation to the operation of these water rights?
But the owners of these wells voluntarily associated themselves with the augmentation plan so they could continue to operate. They didn't have to come in, did they?
No.
Didn't they submit, in effect, to the jurisdiction of the water court?
They submitted to the jurisdiction, and the jurisdiction of the water court extends to addressing the prospective aspects of the operation of the plan. We don't believe that 302 applications were intended to be a remedy for pre-existing injury. And
the injury doesn't occur until the water user on the stream in priority experiences that injury. Isn't that the problem with lag depletions?
That is the issue, but the action, the allegedly unlawful action, has already occurred. And the depletions are coming whether or not these parties voluntarily joined an augmentation plan or not. There's nothing that the plan can do to change that, in a sense. They're completely separate and outside of the plan. If this plan was never filed, they would affect the river. They're the result of operation of the water rights in a pre-existing.
So you don't think the General Assembly in the 69 Act intended any remedial effect with regard to the approval of an augmentation plan? All was forgiven in the past unless you go through individual damages action well by well, right?
That's your position. There's really only one word in the statute that might suggest a remedial purpose, and that is in 3792.308C, the term use. The trial court really hung on the phrase use or proposed use. But that use refers to substitute water supply plan usage. That particular provision was not in the original act. So clearly it was not within the intent of the General Assembly when it was passed. It was actually added in 1977. Now, if you recall from your Empire Lodge case, the state engineer's authority to grant substitute water supply plans was given in 1974 and revoked in 1977. This provision was added in the same bill that revoked the authority to implement substitute water supply plans. And so it's clear that the intent, the use that was involved, were approved substitute water supply plans from the period 1974 to 1977. We don't ascribe the broad remedial intent to that word that the trial court did. I think it's limited to substitute water supply plan issues.
Could I? I'm just mildly confused after this last exchange. Justice Hobbs used the expression "plug the hole in the river." It was my understanding that your argument is the no objection to that, but rather the with regard to what happens to the water from this point on and the priorities, but rather your objection was to making up for past leakages before the hole in the river was plugged. Am I missing that, or are you not complaining about using this kind of procedure to punish you for past transgressions, or not you, but whoever was operating these structures for past transgressions, despite the fact that they would not adversely affect any rights holders in the future?
Let me see if I can answer that. The depletions that we're concerned about are depletions that will affect the river in the future, but were caused by actions of oftentimes unrelated parties in the past, completely outside of WASA's augmentation plan and having no real relationship to that plan. So what we object to is not that, not necessarily, we're not trying to prevent all remedies. We're just looking at your own case law in the Gasp case and the Gardner case, and we're saying a 302 augmentation plan proceeding is not the place. It wasn't intended to be remedial in nature. It was intended to look at what is the purpose of this plan, what are the potential diversions under this plan, and is there enough water to cover these diversions. It wasn't intended to go back.
Mr. Jones, if it involves a future injury, how do you see that as being remedial?
It's remedial in the sense that the actions have already occurred.
Oh, I thought, maybe I misunderstood you, I thought you admitted that they were still occurring and they will occur in the future.
They may have
been caused by out-of-priority pumping in the past, but the effect of that pumping will be on the very structures that you represent, right?
There may be some impacts in the future from the past pumping, but our point is really quite simple in that we don't believe the General Assembly intended to capture that and make the 302 proceeding the context in which those kinds of claims are brought. In terms of the Box Elder designated basin issue, our primary contention here is that an augmentation plan applicant must calculate depletions based upon his or her use of the well under current conditions. In other words, the issue is, if we allow depletions from this well today, how will they affect the river in the future, and how does the water provided offset those depletions? We believe that's the proper question. The trial court standard here really bears no relationship to the actual depletions that are occurring under current conditions. What the trial court did was said, let's look at this basin as if no wells had ever been installed. So to us, it impermissibly expanded the scope of the inquiry from what's the impact of these wells to what's the impact of all wells in the basin. And in so doing, it launched us into kind of a speculative enterprise, what took us clear back into the late 1800s, to try to determine, to really speculate about what the basin might have been like had the wells not been installed. And it just proved to be a completely unworkable standard. And it's inconsistent with the Act, which says that the responsibility of an augmentation plan is to replace depletions at the time and in the location that they're caused, and that you're to replace depletions from the applicant's, quote, applicant's diversion. And in this case, we ended up looking at all the wells that had ever been installed in the basin, making a historical comparison between then and now. We believe that's an unworkable standard for reasons that we described in the brief.
Well, you talk about an unworkable standard, however. What you're saying is once there's a hydraulic break between the tributary and the river caused by depletions, that any junior depletion can then pile on and be immune from substituting to the river their depletions that otherwise would get to the river. Isn't that what you're arguing?
No, what we're arguing is that the augmentation plan applicant has to take the basin as it finds it. You know, the trial court found that the Box Elder Creek stopped flowing on a regular basis to the South Platte River in the early 1950s. Part of the reason for that was well pumping. He also mentioned drought as a cause. We also know now from another ruling he made that there were probably illegal surface diversions into the basin that were contributing to that. And so the contention is there's a whole lot of reasons why things may have changed in the basin. There was no proof whatsoever in the case that things changed in the basin because of the activities of these wells. Some of the wells may have been pumping during the period when the water table was being lowered. Many of them went in after the connection was broken. So we failed to see how it's fair or within the intent of the Act that those wells should be required to replace on this imaginary condition. I just want to say a quick word about the well call issue, and then I'm going to, if you'll permit it, I'll go ahead and sit down and save some of my time for rebuttal. Our fundamental assertion on the well call issue is that really a right to call for water is a fundamental aspect of a water right. Earlier this year, you said that in your Archuleta case when you said the primary value of a water right resides in its priority relative to other water rights. You also said in Empire Lodge that the priority is, quote, the most important stick in the bundle. And what we demonstrated to the trial court, and the trial court found, was that we have a situation during the reservoir fill season on the South Platte where we have a juxtaposition of priorities, where because of the gap in priorities between the senior reservoirs and the junior recharge rights, there are times, and the testimony was consistent, the trial court found that there are some problems with actually fulfilling the well's priorities during that time. The well call is simply a bypass call, an administrative call, that would allow the state engineer to fine-tune the amount of depletions that are required to be replaced by the wells and thereby give them their place in the priority line. And so that's why we believe that is necessary. The trial court made a sweeping legal conclusion that the state engineer did not have the authority to implement a call, a bypass call based on a well priority date. We felt like we had to challenge that here, and that's why we brought that issue up. We believe the state engineer does have that authority, that authority resides specifically in 3791 or 92 501 and 502, that he has the authority and furthermore the responsibility to administer the calls on the river to fulfill those rights and priority. If the wells are required to replace more than is necessary during the reservoir fill season, they have not been allowed to divert or take the benefit of their priority. With that, I think I'll sit down and save the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, I am Paul Bennington, Assistant Attorney General, representing the State Engineer and the Division Engineer for Water Division 1. The engineers agree with appellants that, contrary to the General Assembly's intent, no timely and meaningful judicial review is occurring as to the State Engineer's decisions on applications for temporary substitute water supply plans under Section 3792.3084. Under Section 3084, the potential exists for temporary plans to be approved or denied for 5 years or more before the underlying augmentation plan ever goes to trial or is otherwise resolved. Rejection of the APA review produces the absurd result that appeals are automatically rendered moot by the passage of time when an approved one-year plan either expires or the planting and irrigation seasons end. A denial can result in the loss of a year's crop with no timely judicial review. An approval unsupported by evidence risks injury to vested water rights during the plan year. In the present case, the court ruled in 2006 that the appeals of the 2003 and 2004 SWSPs were moot because the plans expired. The 2005 plan was not appealed. The 2006 plan application was still pending before the state engineer at the time of the court's legal ruling. Nevertheless, the court ordered a four-week SWSP trial in 2006 to be followed by a six-week trial on the augmentation plan in 2007. The water court also ruled that its factual determinations during the first four-week trial would not preclude different factual determinations during the second six-week trial. Such a ruling produces the absurd result of two trials on the same basic plan, which defeats judicial economy and vitiates the common law doctrines of issue and claim.
No, you ascribe this then to the water court's view that this was de novo proceeding for both.
That's correct.
The temporary approval as well as the permanent approval.
That's correct, Your Honor. And our position is that the APA review should be applied to the temporary approval during the plan year, before the plan operates and expires. And de novo review is appropriate for the augmentation plan.
Okay, why is that? There's no specific statutory language saying that, is there?
There's no language, conflicting language in 3084C, Your Honor, that conflicts with application of the APA. And unless there's clear language conflicting with the APA should control in the judicial review of those.
And the reason that's an APA issue is because you have an executive official, in effect, making this decision?
Yes, it's a discretionary decision of the state engineer, Your Honor, who has the agency expertise to review these temporary plans. And the statute provides for judicial review of an appeal. And we believe that that should be an APA review of the appeal. Now, this court held in Argus Real Estate versus E-470 Public Highway Authority that a court lacks the authority to abrogate common law doctrines like claim preclusion and issue preclusion in the absence of an undoubtedly clear statutory exemption, which just doesn't exist in 3084C. Now, the applicant in the present case eventually opted for one trial in 2007. Withdrew its 2006 application and agreed not to pump until the final augmentation plan was approved. I don't think they wanted to deal with two trials on the same plan. In any event, the full consolidation of appeal into one de novo trial provides no timely relief for mooted appeals. On the other hand, two de novo trials requires two trial tracks with two sets of expert disclosures and two sets of discovery and motion practice for the same basic plan. The General Assembly did not intend either of these two absurd results. In the SWSP statute, the General Assembly clearly declared that there are certain circumstances under which the time required to go through water court adjudication process can be problematic for some water users, and it was desirable to establish some additional authority for the state engineer to approve temporary substitute water supply plans.
Mr. Bennington? Does the fact that Judge Klein indicated that only the parties appealing the state engineer's decisions have standing to participate into that appeal, does that make any difference, or how do you view that?
Well, Your Honor, if it's going to be a de novo trial on the plan, I think all parties need to be able to participate on that because of the risk of claim preclusion and issue preclusion attaching.
Well, wait a minute.
If it's an APA review.
But there's also a statute that says you can't give any whatever findings of fact you make on the SWS appeal, you can't have absolutely no preclusive effect, I thought.
There's supposed to be no
That's what the statute says.
It's not supposed to give rise to a presumption or shift the burden of proof, Your Honor. We believe that's intended for the augmentation plan case, that the state engineer's decision, as affirmed or reversed by the water court, isn't going to have any presumptive effect. That's an evidentiary standard as opposed to the standard of review.
On the later trial, right.
On the later trial, that's correct, Your Honor. Or if another case is litigated where somebody wants to sue over injury or flooding or whatever for damages, that the state engineer's determination of no injury would have a presumptive would not have a presumptive effect in that other litigation, Your Honor. But we don't think that was intended to apply to the appellate review of the agency action. Now, since
I wonder what
I don't get that. I don't understand. I mean, I'm just too slow here. What do you mean it doesn't apply to the whatever findings of fact are made in the appellate review would not have any effect on the augmentation plan findings, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So what's that got to do with whether or not it's de novo review or the APA standard?
Well, Your Honor, if it's a de novo trial and the court actually litigates factual issues, we think that does have a preclusive effect.
But there are different parties, aren't there? Only the parties that appeal have standing?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that would be correct if it was just an APA judicial review. But if it's going to be a full-blown de novo trial on the plan, we believe all the parties should be able to participate.
But that isn't what Judge Klein ordered.
That is not what Judge Klein
ordered. So there wouldn't be any preclusive effect. We've got to have the same parties, as I understand.
Thank you. Even if you limited it to the parties in the appeal, Your Honor, because you were actually litigating and making factual determinations, claim preclusion, initial preclusion would attach to that determination. And that's the whole idea behind those common law doctrines. And you can't, a court cannot abrogate those doctrines without an undoubtedly clear statutory exemption. If you look at the statute 309-4A, which is the interruptible water supply agreement statute, in that appellate review section, there is specific language that the court reviewing the plan or the state engineer's decision, that its decision in that appeal will have no claim preclusive effect in any subsequent augmentation plan case or other litigation. There, the legislature was very clear. This is going to be a de novo review, but we're not going to have claim preclusion attached. Now, there's no similar language like that in 308-4C, Your Honor. So we think the General Assembly did not intend for a de novo trial where claim preclusion and issue preclusion would attach to the appeal. We think consolidating the appeal with the augmentation plan case makes a lot of sense because similar facts and law, but it doesn't mean you have to apply the same standard to the appeal that you do in the augmentation plan case. You can do APA review, won't give rise to any preclusive effect when you get to trial on the augmentation plan. More importantly, Your Honor, you get resolution during a plan year. Right now, we're not getting any resolutions within a plan year. Now, since 2003, the Water Court has incorrectly subjected all SWSPs under 308-4 to the same problematic adjudication process that the General Assembly was trying to deal with. But we're getting no meaningful review of the SWSPs.
Mr. Bankton, would you just explain to me why you say, I mean, maybe you're absolutely right, but why you say that the you don't get timely review if there's de novo review?
Well, if,
just because
this case,
of the case,
Honor,
law? I mean, what?
No, I don't, it's not the case law, Your Honor. What the Water Court found is for the 2003 and 2004 plans in this case, he wasn't going to even consider those appeals until he got to trial. So those plans run. They become moot because they expire, and nothing happens for, you know, 5 or 6 years, Your Honor, and he just doesn't deal with them, and that's a real problem. I mean, it's kind of odd for an agency like us to be up here saying, hey, please review us, but we think it's important that the Water Court do these reviews. We think that's what the General Assembly intended. Now, this...
But I guess what is missing, I think, in your response is I understand that the reviews aren't being done. This particular water judge apparently is not doing those reviews, but I don't understand why that's linked to the type of review. I mean, that seems to be a problem separate from the type of review, which is, I think, what Justice Bender was trying to ask you. So why is it that, I mean, you seem to be implying that they can't be done because it's a de novo review. Why can't you just have the de novo review on a more timely basis?
Because, Your Honor, the de novo review requires the full trial track, procedures. You need to have disclosures, you need to have expert reports, depositions, the whole motion practice. We just don't think that's reasonably possible to accomplish that within a plan year. And when you look at the other statutory provisions in 308-3 and 308-5, certainly a 308-5 plan calls for an expedited hearing. And yet that plan, that's just a temporary, that's another authorization for temporary plans where the depletions won't go out more than 5 years. The court has said, yeah, I'm going to do APA review for 308-5 plans that have these depletions that only go out 5 years, but I'm not going to do any review of these 308-4 plans where depletions can go out 20 or 30 years. and I'm not going to review those for 5 or 6 years after the fact. You could have more than 5 years of injury occurring, Your Honor, without any judicial review of the water court's of the state engineer's decisions on those plans. And we just don't think, we think that's an absurd result, Your Honor. Now, this failure of judicial review is capable of repetition while evading review by this court. Our office estimates that since 2003, over 40 appeals under 3084 have been filed with the Division I Water Court. To date, no appeal has been heard and substantively resolved. This is one of the few cases to go to trial and to be appealed. To date, this issue has evaded judicial review because the SWSP appeals are rendered moot either by the passage of time or by settlements in these cases. We believe the Water Court should be required to expedite APA reviews during a plan year. Judicial appellate review should not involve a de novo trial during which the water judge considers new evidence that was never before the state engineer. That is not judicial appellate review and cannot reasonably be accomplished during a plan year in complicated cases. So for all these reasons, Your Honors, the engineers urge the court to rule on the proper standard of review for appeals under Section 3084.
Well, before you sit down, Mr. Bennington, whose time are you allocated to?
On this issue, Your Honor, I'm seeing the clock here as...
Well, I think you've run over his time by about 10 minutes by now, if that's the time.
Yeah, the clock indicated more time than I thought I was going to get, Your Honor. But this time was allocated to Mr. Jones.
Okay. Would you stop the clock, Bailiff, please?
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give the appellee 30 minutes, please.
May it please the court. I'm Sarah Klon with White and Jankowski. I'm here representing the City of Sterling, and I'll be presenting argument on behalf of all the objectors in the case, in the following list, I should say. I'll be presenting argument on behalf of Sterling, City of Boulder, Pawnee Well Users, Centennial Water and Sanitation District, the Harmony Ditch Company, East Cherry Creek Valley Water and Sand District, Public Service Company, I guess now known as Excel, Fort Morgan Reservoir Company, Jackson Lake, and the City of Thornton.
And could I have your name again?
Sarah Klon.
Thank you.
This case requires the court to apply well-established principles of Colorado water law to determine whether the water court properly imposed terms and conditions on the pumping of WES's, and I'm going to use that term for the well augmentation subdistrict, WES's member wells, to avoid injury to senior rights. As the record reflects, at the time of trial, WES had obtained the rights to use only about 1,200 acre feet of augmentation water, and in 2009 alone, its ongoing depletions, even without WES member pumping, are in the neighborhood of 9,000 acre feet. Not surprisingly, in light of this disparity between supplies and depletions, the Water Court imposed terms and conditions that are designed to allow WES a decretal framework, decretal in the sense of a decree, for pumping its wells but while minimizing injury to senior water rights. WES's arguments, however, on appeal, seek to thwart the Water Court's order and ask this court to reject long-established principles of Colorado water law in order, presumably, to be merciful to well owners with few options. Simply put, all of WES's arguments on appeal, with the exception of the SWSP appellate standard, are designed to avoid replacing injurious depletions or to minimize the amount of depletions that WES has to replace. The senior water rights participating in this matter bear no malice towards the WES well owners. However, we also believe that reinventing Colorado water law, as WES's appeal suggests, in aid of well owners who have insufficient supplies of augmentation water, would result in injury to our clients' rights and unnecessary disruption to well-established Colorado law. As my argument will reflect, my client and the objectors who I'm arguing on behalf of believe the proper course is to affirm the Water Court's decision. I'll be addressing the arguments in the same order that Mr. Jones did and begin with the pre-2003 depletions, unless there are questions on any issue that's been presented so far at this time. As I said in the opening, WAS has a large disparity between the amount of augmentation water it has a right to use to replace depletions and the depletions that its member wells are responsible for. The pre-2003 argument, the post-pumping depletion argument, as Mr. Jones described it this morning, would allow WAS to greatly reduce its burden as far as the amount of augmentation water it has to provide to the river. But as our briefs suggested to you, we do not believe that the statutory scheme supports this kind of a concession.
Ms. Klein?
Yes.
I was always a little bit unclear about, just about how far back prior to 2003 the order went.
The order goes back to the trial court's order?
Yes.
The trial court's order, based on the pre-74 depletion summary judgment ruling and then his order on reconsideration, which came later, both established that WAS wells are responsible for depletions from the pumping,
yes, Without regard to timing?
Mm-hmm.
The evidence was that there was pumping in this area all the way back to 1904?
I believe the evidence was that there were wells drilled back to 1904.
Does it follow that the order seems to suggest that the remedy has to go all the way back to 1904?
I believe that would suggest that. I believe, however, the evidence...
But it's not explicit in any...
That's true.
Are we just deducing that from the order? I mean, that's where I was left after I had read the order, but I'm not certain.
I believe the judge found that any depletions that currently accrue to the river, regardless of when the pumping occurred, are depletions that WAS is responsible for replacing.
All right. So for more than 100 years, any depletions that would have taken place are now the responsibility of WAS and WAS's augmentation plan.
Yes, but with due respect, I think that's a theoretical problem, because as the evidence showed, the depletions that are currently hitting the river are not don't have that much history.
Well, that's the problem I always seem to have with this water cases in general, is what's theoretical and what isn't. And so what really has to happen if WAS was going to start with its augmentation? To what baseline do they have to go in order to correct these past depletions? And if it's not 1904, what is the evidence in the record which would show where they have to get in order to have corrected this?
The evidence in the record calculated depletions existing today based on past pumping. And at this point, standing in front of you today, I can't tell you what the earliest year was.
What's the difference between, in terms of what has to happen between, the 2003 post-pumping depletion standard or from only 2003 forward?
What's
pre and post, yes. What's the difference?
You know, I don't think we ever quantified that, Your Honor, because this pre-2003 argument was first seen by objectors on appeal. It wasn't evidence that was presented at trial.
I'm sorry, this is just the frustration I always have. If you haven't quantified it, what is this argument really about?
Well, currently in the river in 2009, WAS is currently not allowed to pump because of the nature of the water court's order.
Right.
Currently in the river, in 2009, the river and senior water rights are seeing a 9,000-acre-foot hole,
okay,
associated with pumping from WAS member wells from the structures that they sought to augment.
From when to when?
I do not know what the first year of pumping.
And how do you know it's 9,000?
Because the engineers in the case presented extensive technical evidence associated with what they called a projection tool.
So the state engineer is saying they have to repair or come up with this 9,000 acre feet before they can even start augmenting?
The engineers, being all of the experts in the case, including the state engineer, I believe, also joined in this argument. But yes, that's the amount of water that they knew they had to come up with in 2009. Now, there's a table in the record associated with the City of Sterling's exhibits, which describes the the timing over the next 20 years of the amount of depletions, and Justice Rice, if was not to pump for the remainder of the next 15 or 20 years, eventually the depletions, and this is just a physical fact that you're probably aware of, the depletions go down over time.
Right.
So over time, the amount for which was would be responsible for decreases. If was had sufficient augmentation supplies, as the wells, if the wells were currently allowed to pump, the amount of water they would have to replace would remain, I would say, probably relatively constant, with the proportion attributable to those past pumping depletions declining, sort of like a down line on a graph, if you will. And so our argument is that as a matter of law, because these are structures that was has invoked the water court's jurisdiction in order to obtain the lawful right to pump, they are responsible for the depletions associated with the injury to senior water rights that comes from operation of the wells. These 215 wells were operated prior to was seeking an augmentation plan. And the fact that they have come in at this point is immaterial to when the legal obligation to replace that injury begins. And if you look at 3792.305.8, which is the augmentation plan provision of the one of the augmentation plan provisions in the 1969 Act, as we told you in our briefs, the language used by the General Assembly in this statute is the term use or proposed use of the water. Well, use seems
to
be...
Let me just stick with you on that, though,
sure.
Because I have that section right in front of me, and it says, in reviewing a proposed plan for augmentation and in considering terms and conditions that may be necessary to avoid injury, seeming to suggest injury in the future.
Well, I think it accrue. I think the injury may accrue at any time, and obviously, when the augmentation.
But how can you avoid something that's already happened?
The diversions happened, but the injury doesn't accrue until the depletion hits the river. So, for example, if there's a well that pumps 12 miles from the river today, in 2019. That might be when the first time the depletions from the diversion today hit the river. So you have a diversion today and an injury that accrues 10 years from now. Similarly, we could have had was wells that pumped in 1999, and the diversion in 1999 causes the depletion that causes injury to senior rights today. So I think that the use of the term may be necessary means injury accruing today, regardless of when that original diversion took place.
I'd like to ask a question about that statute 305. As I was looking at the current codification, I noticed that there was a bill passed in the last legislative session that seems, you know, of course, it doesn't apply to this case because it's future perspective. But what's the impact of what the legislature did last year?
The factual impact or the legal impact?
Yeah.
Or both?
Either.
Okay. I think that the legal impact is that the, in terms of this argument, is that the legislature expressly exempted depletions prior to 1974 from replacement under 305.8b. Which would seem to be entirely inconsistent with Was's argument that they are not obligated to replace depletions prior to 2003.
Why did they come up with the 1974 date?
It's my understanding that they came up with 1974 because that was the date that the state engineer, division engineer, adopted. State engineer adopted the first South Platte well rules. And the South Platte well rules were a follow-on from the Fellhauer case, where this court said that the state engineer needed rules in order to administer wells. And so the argument went, the wells couldn't have known that they needed to replace depletions until those rules were adopted, and therefore they shouldn't be responsible for depletions prior to 1974. And the factual impact of that, Justice Mularkey, we actually did look at that at the time that the legislation was pending, and this is nowhere in the record, so I will flag that. But the factual impact is that there is not many depletions left that haven't hit the river from pre-1974 to pumping. So the impact is very small. And that may be a lead into the question you were asking me that I was unable to answer, Justice Rice, about how far back depletions go. There are, I think, as I recall, it was a couple hundred acre feet only that hadn't hit the river yet from pre-74 depletions. So we're looking at the bulk of what's in the river now or hitting the river now from diversions pre-74 and since. Obviously, we disagree with Wuz's argument that 3058 is only an SWSP statute. I think the plain terms of the statutory language demonstrate that it's related to augmentation plans.
Can I ask you something else about legislation in recent years? This package of the 9,000 acre feet that might be owing in 2009. Mm-hmm. Hasn't the legislature now allowed other more flexible arrangements for acquiring augmentation water that would supplement the decree framework for an augmentation plan? And if so, would you explain what that is?
Yes, Justice Hobbs. Section 3792.308.10 provides a mechanism, interestingly, in the context of substitute water supply plans. And recall that a substitute water supply plan can only be applied for if there's a pending augmentation application. 308.10 actually modifies that structure a little bit and will now allow decreed plans in Division 1, so decreed plans like WAS or the Central GMS plan, which was a stipulated plan and contained more wells but ended up not going on appeal, those plans would be allowed to file for an SWSP for temporary one-year supplies of augmentation water, to actually be, in a sense, it's an administrative way to add to the decreed augmentation sources. And there are a number of terms and conditions in there. The interesting thing about the 308 Part 10 adoption is that the short-term leases are for replacement water to be used for depletions that arise only from pumping prior to 2003. So clearly the General Assembly has in mind that pumping prior to 2003 is something that must be replaced, or they wouldn't have adopted this statute.
If you're finished with that line, may I come back to the statute, please?
Sure.
And now I want to turn you to Section 3. It talks specifically about the language that your opposing side is concerned about.
I'm sorry, which statute?
3792.305, Section 3A.
Okay.
And it's the second sentence. If it is determined, et cetera, that the proposed change contract or plan is presented in the application, the proposed ruling or decree, this is the language I'm now concerned about. Are you with me? Okay. Mm-hmm. Would cause such injurious effect? Mm-hmm. Once again, we're looking as if we're talking about something in the future. Would cause, not has cause, or?
Well, the plan itself, I think you have to make sense of that sentence. And the fact of the matter is, the plan itself can't cause injury. It's not supposed to cause injury. That's the standard by which water courts are supposed to grant plans for augmentation. So I think the plan itself can't cause injury. So you've got to look at the operations of the structures associated with the plan.
Well, I guess that's one of the things that's confusing to me as well. I mean, you have to, as a judge, only look at what's before you, which is the augmentation plan. And you have to decide whether the plan, what the plan is going to do. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't necessarily, to my mind at least, say, well, what has been done in the past before I look at what this plan might do in the future. And yet that seems to be what you're reading into the statute. You say that's consistent with our law. Where have we said that?
I think that 3058B.
So you turn only to the statute. And that's that language.
3058A, I'm sorry.
8?
8A. 3058A.
Okay, I don't have an A, I just have an E.
There's no A.
In the 2009 statutory version, which I just got yesterday, 308 has been, 358...
We didn't have the new books this year, haven't you heard?
Well, then you're in luck, because you just have to look at Part 8. I believe under the prior version, it was just in Part 8.
It was affected, the 2009 codification is affected by this amendment that we were talking about.
I'm sorry to take your time. Would you go ahead?
The language in 3058 under the 08 version and 3058A under the 09 version of the statute refers to this language, the use or proposed use of the water. And to me, that suggests that the General Assembly understands this, if you will, kind of double-barreled effect of a well diversion, Justice Rice. The 1969 Act says that wells shall be integrated into the system to the extent possible, which recognizes that well diversions are in and of themselves different from surface diversions. And you're going to have a well diversion that impacts the river at a different time than a surface diversion does. We know when 15 CFS is taken out of the South Platte River from a ditch because you can measure it below the ditch and it's not there anymore. You do that with a well 12 miles away, and nobody's going to know that until the depletions hit the river, and that could take 10 years. So I think that those, the 1969 Act as a whole, including Section 102 and 3058, new Part A, have to be read together to reach that conclusion. I guess I'd also just say a quick word about the policy issues. It seems to me that if depletions don't have to be replaced until an OG plan is filed with the Water Court, why would you ever file? You're going to be a well out there on, you know, bandit status, and you can hope that maybe nobody notices and nobody sues you. The existence of the other remedies is acknowledged, but I think the existence of other remedies alone doesn't call for the kind of result that the was.
But can't you argue the policy otherwise? And if you're going to have to be responsible for all the depletions going back to 1974, 1904, for example, why would you ever try to come into compliance with the law and file an augmentation plan?
That I think is exactly what I just said. It's just that as a senior representing senior water rights, I view that as a bad policy, that we should be trying to integrate the wells into the system through the augmentation plan process.
Right. Maybe we're speaking at cross purposes. I mean, we want to encourage people to file augmentation plans, don't we?
That's right.
But why would somebody file an augmentation plan if they're going to be responsible for something that they're other people have done for the last 100 years?
I don't think other people, I would disagree with the characterization that other people have done it. I believe the structure, the operation of the structure is what creates the injury, and there isn't any personal liability that we're talking about here. We're not talking about damages from somebody's actions. We're talking about compliance with Colorado water law, which provides that the senior water rights shall be protected from injury. And that may be a burden if you're a well owner, but that's a fact and that's the law. I'm sorry, that's a law anyway. And that ought to be something that is encouraged. And I believe that reading the statute in the way that WES does would discourage that. I'd like to make a few brief points on the box elder argument and the well call. I have agreed to give 5 minutes to the state engineer, which will endorse the objector's position on the well call. And so I understand Mr. Bennington's going to be getting up for another few minutes to talk about the well call issue. Quickly on box elder, in fact, the objectors believe that the wells are not responsible for depletions on the river as they find them. They're responsible for replacing injurious depletions. And as Justice Hobbs' question highlighted, if there's a disconnection from the river, for whatever reason, if there's a disconnection of a tributary stream from the river, and the wells are only responsible for replacing that portion of the water that would get back to the river, that would be a wholesale change in Colorado law. It would essentially require overruling of Comstock versus Ramsey, which is this court's decision from the early 20th century, in which the court declined to find that water that was collected in a seepage ditch was essentially free from the call, just because someone, as the court said, was spry enough to capture it. It's the same argument here. The facts in the case, I would recommend that you read the
could
facts.
I'm sorry to keep asking you so many questions, but if I understand the record correctly, there are other reasons for why it might have dried up other than just drilling it. For example, it could have been a drought. It could have been surface water, et cetera.
The record reflects that the only reason there are wells there is that there's seepage water from the Fryco and Henrelin irrigation systems up gradient. Those systems went into operation in the early 20th century. They seepage and return flow from those systems raised the groundwater table in the Box Elder Basin. The wells went in and pumped seepage and return flow water that was otherwise on its way back to the South Platte River. This is Comstock versus Ramsey, identical. The wells essentially, if you will.
But the trial judge didn't make the finding that the only reason that this dried up was because of the wells. He said it could have been these other reasons as well.
That's true, but the point is not the dry up. The point is, and that's not what to focus on, the point is, what is that water that was pumped?
Why isn't that the point?
Because the water that was pumped is seepage and return flow water that Colorado law says is to be relied on by downstream seniors, including the city of Sterling. And the
I don't understand that. Tell me why that's not the point again, please.
The whether or not the stream was dried up is not the point. The point is that the water that's being pumped is seepage and return flow water that downstream water rights are entitled to. It would have gotten there but for the wells. The wells came and took the water, and in the course of that also disconnected the stream from the South Platte River by pumping all the water in the groundwater basin. But the evidence at trial, Justice Rice, actually showed that but for the seepage and return flow water from Fryco and Henrelin, there would have never been any wells in the basin. So the water table simply wasn't deep enough. So the disconnection is a convenient fact if you want to try and argue, as WAS does, that they're not responsible for replacing all the depletions to the South Platte River. But it really isn't the controlling fact. The controlling fact is that they're pumping seepage and return flow water that would otherwise get to and is relied upon or was relied upon by downstream seniors. I see that I'm into Mr. Bennington's time, and he's anxious to get up again. So with that, I'll close.
May it please the court, I'm glad to see the time is continuing to go without being reset here, and I apologize for my earlier overrun. As to the well call issue, the engineers are in the same boat as the court and may only speculate as to whether or under what river conditions a so-called well call would be a necessary, desirable, or lawful means of curtailing junior diverters. Such a decision must rest on specific facts, not before the engineers or the court in this case. The appellants seek an advisory legal opinion not based on any concrete or particularized facts. Moreover, because the appellant does not seek a change in the final judgment as part of this appeal, the court lacks jurisdiction in the absence of any live controversy.
As I understand the state engineer's position, if and when he or she wants to use such a tool, which isn't obvious, has ever been used before, that that engineer may have authority, but why decide that now? It should be an actual case and controversy, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly right.
So you're not disavowing the possibility?
We're not disavowing the possibility, Your Honor. The state engineer and the division engineer in Water Division 1 don't see a present need to use this tool for administrative purposes, or that they would necessarily use it in the future. If and when a division engineer in Colorado, you know, decides the circumstances are appropriate for this type of administration and somebody objects, then that would be the proper time for judicial review of that agency action. We believe the Water Court properly exercised its discretion in rejecting the well call provision requested by the applicant. This provision was not necessary to prevent injury to vested water rights. The water court found that at trial, no specifics were proposed or elaborated in detail. Much confusion ensued as a result. The water court found that, quote, on the whole, the effects of the well calls are highly uncertain and rely fundamentally on the engineers and their discretion to work out the details of such a provision. Considering these uncertainties, the court cannot determine that the well call provision would not injure vested water rights, end quote. Now, during times of shortage, a call is an administrative tool used by the engineers to distribute water under the priority system based on the available supply in the river and the demand of various users in a particular stretch of the river. The priority date of the call is set by the water commissioner based on a determination of the most junior water right that may divert part or all of its priority. Upstream rights junior to the call must be curtailed unless their depletions are augmented, or their curtailment would not result in the water reaching senior water rights that are entitled to divert. Now, as the engineers understand the theoretical use of a well call, it would be another means of curtailing junior water rights to provide water to a senior water right in need. The theory is that the engineers could better optimize the beneficial use of the state's waters through a more calibrated selection of the priority date of the call. However, such administration is untested, and the proper time for judicial review is if and when a division engineer uses this means of curtailing juniors and somebody objects. Now, Your Honors, I'd like to turn briefly to the pre-2003 pumping issue. There are a couple considerations that were not in the briefs of any of the parties. I believe the court needs to look at the original applications filed in 2003. Both the applications in these consolidated cases based their 2003 depletions on pumping that occurred from 1974 to 2002. That was a relief requested by the applicants. And we think the applicants put this issue of pre-2003 pumping before the court in their application. And we encourage the court to look at those original applications. And we think that also put at issue whether 1974 was a proper cutoff date for such determinations. My time has run, and I thank you, the court, for your time.
Rebuttal?
I think Mr. Bennington and I were laboring under the wrong assumption when the clock reset here.
That's so. All right.
Okay. Wanted to address the bills that were passed last legislative session. The first one, 305-8B, that's the one related to the 1974 cutoff. We believe this acts as a kind of a statute of limitations. It does not change the jurisdictional issues I described. Now remember, we never said that the water court could not ascribe this liability. We said that the water court could not do it in the context of a 302 application, that a different kind of service would be required. So it's entirely possible that you could have a 302 application for an augmentation plan, proper service upon parties alleged to have taken unlawful actions in the past, and the court could have the issue in front of it. So this could remain applicable. You've said yourself where there's two interpretations to a statute, one that is consistent with prior decisions and recognizes due process principles, and one that does not. If there's ambiguity, you'll go with the one that addresses the prior decisions. We believe that would be consistent with GASP and Gardner, your other decisions. 308.10, the substitute water supply plan statute that allows certain plans to lease water for the replacement of 2003 depletions, was a response to decreed plans in Division 1. There are a number of decreed plans that already require replacement of these depletions all the way back to the beginning or to 1974 by stipulation. They were agreed upon. The General Assembly knows this. They know that this is a tremendous burden on the plans and is substantially curtailing pumping, and so they tailored a remedy for these decreed plans. We don't think it changes the issue here.
Well, what about Mr. Bennington's last point that you raised this in your application?
We did. I'd have to look back at the application. I believe that the depletions were initially calculated in that manner, consistent with the previous stipulations. But contrary to Ms. Kwan's point, we definitely raised this to the trial court on a number of occasions, and he made a specific pretrial ruling in July of 2006 addressing this issue. So, in terms of the burden, there was a question about how much is the burden on the plan here. It would be irresponsible of me to quote numbers from memory, but I can tell you that these pre-2003 depletions prevent these wells from pumping today. It's a substantial burden. That's why we're here. It makes a big difference in terms of the operation of the plans. On the policy issue on...
Well, how would these well owners propose to make up the hole in the river that is occurring in the future due to the operation of the water right in conjunction with the structure? If not in this proceeding, how's that going to be done?
To the extent that there is injury that occurs, any party that's injured has a remedy and can seek damages for that injury.
So individual actions, presumably in the water court, to collect damages against these well owners?
Against the well owners that made the allegedly unlawful diversions.
So then you're tying it back again to ownership or title rather than the ongoing operation of a water right under its priority. Isn't that correct?
This is similar in a lot of regards to the Central Colorado Water Conservancy District gravel pit case, where the General Assembly amended the statute to exempt about 9,000 acre feet of year per year of depletions from replacement in the South Platte River. Opposers came in and said that that was unconstitutional, that the General Assembly didn't have the ability to essentially forgive or to allow that to happen. It appears that the General Assembly has done the same thing in this case because the statute is written prospectively. And whether I hear your skepticism, I understand it, but I think we have to look at the statute and enforce it as it's written. In terms of a policy issue that was raised on post-pumping depletions, there is a policy consideration to keep in mind here. If the depletions for the wells are actually tied to the water right, kind of a lien, if you will, an in-rem type concept, there's nothing to prevent well owners from simply abandoning the water right and the structure, drilling a new one, and shedding all of the depletions. Really, the only meaningful way to get some kind of a remedy for these depletions is to have a remedy against the person who made the depletions. If we tie it to the water right, it can be abandoned. And believe me, in this context, the priority of the well pales in comparison, the value of the priority to the well, in a sense, pales in comparison to the burden of these post-pumping depletions. So I think that could happen in this case. So that's something to consider.
Well, it's a troublesome concept, but on the other hand, what these folks covered by the central, I'm going to call it a sub-district, was to allow them to continue their activities on the river, right? I mean, that's really the basic issue here. You'd agree with that, right?
I would phrase it as what did was to create a new augmentation plan to allow new depletions on the river. I think we have a real blurring here of the wells, them. Who do we mean when we say them? Do we mean these well owners? Do we mean was? Do we mean former well owners? I think we're just blending a lot of important legal concepts.
Here's my point, though. The augmentation plan has to identify the structures for which the replacement water is being offered to the river at the time and place of the injury as it actually shows up in the river, correct? I mean, that's the whole function of this augmentation plan.
Yes, I agree with you there. I think we just disagree about when that obligation begins. We believe it's depletions caused by the operation of the plan, not a pre-existing injury.
But you're freeing everybody up on the river to basically come in for a plan that is differentiated from anything that occurred in combination of the structure and the water right in the past, right? I mean, every time you file a new application, you get your injury that's not yet about to occur is in effect forgiven because it's almost impossible to go water right by water right, structure by structure, damage case by damage case. Think about the implication of that on the court and its resources.
I think it's a legitimate concern that you're raising, but I would argue that the only way to ensure, or the best way to ensure that injury doesn't occur, is to tie the responsibility for replacement to the augmentation plan. So in your example, if someone came in and got an augmentation plan, and you're suggesting that perhaps they might abandon that plan and start a new one in order to shed the depletions in a sense, the way that the plans are entered, the water right, the replacement sources, are tied to the replacement of depletions generated by the plan. Those water rights cannot escape that augmentation plan until that injury is fully remedied. And so really the best way to do this is to look at it plan by plan, to marry the depletions caused by that plan with the sources proposed by that plan, and for the water court decrees to lock in that replacement to prevent injury. We think that's what the General Assembly designed here.
Thank you.
Okay. I did have one.
I think your time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
On behalf of the court, I want to thank counsel for your arguments. Case will stand submitted.